Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got to tell you, I'm still stuck watching those videos, especially the one with Mitt Romney just turning and hightailing back the other way. I think like Swalwell said, was it 53 steps, 58 steps away from having a U.S. senator being captured by these people? It's just remarkable. And look, I had a whole show planned, obviously, on other topics, and we're going to get to those. But the impeachment front and foremost. So I'm gonna ask my next guest some thoughts on that, and then we're going to get into the labor stuff that I wanted to get into. That's why I've asked Sean Richmond to come talk with us. He's the program director at the SUNY College Empire Center for Labor Studies. He's one of the really good folks in labor. Sean, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me. So it's the Harry Van Arsdale Jr. School of Labor Studies. At SUNY Empire State College. It's a lot of words, but they all matter.
It is. It was all a lot of words. And that's what I had. Just like the impeachment, the guy yesterday said it's a lot of words. The Constitution's a lot of words. And then went on to some bizarre rambling. But before, let's get into real quick. Have you been following this?
I mean, I saw the video they cut, and there's no horror movie that could really compete with it. And, we all know that, like, most of the Republican senators are inclined to vote to acquit because they're terrified. And, it's like, are they terrified of, like, getting voted out? And actually, I think a lot of them are terrified of, like, these people tried to murder them, and they will come back and try to murder them again. And their best strategy here seems to be like, let's just vamp for time. Let's just like tap dance and, they're not dealing with the issue that they have created, which is that there are people that are like ready to just murder their governmental representatives, murder their neighbors. Like, we have unleashed a real monster here. Trump has unleashed a monster. 40 years of Nixon and Reagan Republicanism has unleashed a monster, and it's out of control.
No, and look, I don't give Trump all the credit. This is who the Republican Party has been for a very long time. He was just the one who brought it out and was in the moment when all of the organizing came out. Exactly. He's the one who lifted it all up. And exposed it. I mean, back in 92, I was joking, like a lot of people were, that Buchanan speeches were better in their original German. it wasn't a shock back then either.
But and what an intellectual he was compared to.
Exactly. Yeah. And for me, this moment is about the next president. For someone like Josh Hawley, who wants to be president. And if he ever found any personality, who knows, maybe. It's about holding him accountable down the road for me.
Yeah. Or Tom Cotton is also, I think.
There's another one. I do want to, since I got that, I do now want to talk a little bit about, for me, a lot of how we got to this moment is the fact that, we've had, 40 years of deindustrialization. We've had, declining labor union density that's caused wages to decline over the last 40 years. In fact, the Rand Corporation did a study that over the last, 45 years, we've had something like $100 trillion in wealth stolen from the working class of this country and divided and redistributed upwards. The conditions are such that the kind of anger that we see is fairly predictable. One of the things that I had hoped that Joe Biden is going to do is help try and turn some of that around. So for me, on day one, him firing Peter Robb was a huge step in the right direction, in my view. But I wanted to get some of your thoughts on Biden's plan and what we need to do to answer some of those labor questions.
Yeah, I'm a little bit frustrated by Biden is like playing his cards really close to his chest. So like we're doing a lot of tea reading, right? Like in a lot of ways it's a throwback to 1933. Roosevelt was really vague about what he was going to do. Oh, it's a New Deal. Okay, great. That can mean anything. And Biden has been similar. I do think that Biden is a real change in any Democratic president that we've had in our lifetimes. Carter plus, in that I think that he recognizes that that Trump won because of the decline of unions, right? And just like, Trump won the state of Michigan in the year 2016 by about 10,000 votes, with fewer votes than Romney got 4 years prior. And, for Mr. Car Elevator, Michigan is as close as he comes to a home state.
Right.
Right. And there's a lot of things you could chalk up to, like, why the Democrats lost Michigan in 2016, but is right to work a part of it? I mean, probably it's worth 10,000 votes at least. So I think that Joe Biden is like, it comes in unlike any other Democratic president in our lifetimes, recognizing that he has to grow the labor movement by as many million new members as he can in the next 2 years. He's got 2 years before the midterms, before he's locked out and he can't get any more of his agenda through. So that is encouraging. My greatest fear in all of this, and the reason that I wrote my book, was that I don't think that labor, the labor left, labor intellectuals have really grappled enough with, like, well, how the hell do we revive the labor movement? And so the PRO Act, which really might pass, really, really might pass through reconciliation, or if they get rid of the filibuster, we're off to the races. But the drafting process of the PRO Act was a lot of sort of like, sure, yeah, fine, throw that in, whatever, this thing's never going to pass. It wasn't like sort of consciously structured as like, okay, how do we win?
Right.
And that sort of terrifies me, because if, like, potentially the PRO Act is our only shot. If we got this 2 year window and all we're doing is passing things through reconciliation, this is it. We get the PRO Act and then we somehow have to grow by 5 million union members. And, I could criticize the PRO Act. There's stuff that I think that's missing in there. I also just think that there's like strategic, there's just ways that union staffers, union leaders, union members even grapple with strategy, where, we tend to deal with sort of received knowledge. We tend to sort of like, okay, so you did this before me 20 years ago. Tell me how it's done. And it's like, the PRO Act passes, everything radically changes, and we got to change up our playbook really fast, because we got to organize 5 million members in 2 years.
Right. No, that's an excellent point. I think where the right does this much better than the left is they have think tanks in every state who
they're
paid to figure this stuff out, to game this stuff out constantly.
They play
and
the long
then
game.
They have a media structure that pounds it out constantly. Right. One of the reasons we started this show 16 years ago is to have a place for working people to get some bit of information and have the discussions that we're having. Because I'm thinking the same way. Okay, how do we get into these places to organize them? I've done organizing over the years. It's hard to get into places to even organize them. So how do you get over those obstacles, even if the law's on your side? And that's going to be a lot of work and a lot of how to.
It is. And I mean, so my biggest criticism with the PRO Act is that it didn't grapple enough with a Supreme Court and lower court precedent. The judges have messed up labor law way more than Taft-Hartley ever did.
Yeah.
And this law needs to say to the NLRB, ignore all that crap. The judges and their black robes can drop dead. I think another problem that we have is that the labor movement really like chews up and spits out organizers. And so a lot of the experience of the John Sweeney era, 1995 plus, organize or die, a lot of the people who like went through hell and learned a lot have moved on. They got kicked out. We got to figure out a way to bring those people back. Maybe not in their old roles. I don't want to return to full-time organizing, but I'm happy to be a mentor to organizers who are out there. And the organizing model, and I'm defining this as something that anything that's based off of Kate Bronfenbrenner's research. Kate Bronfenbrenner at Cornell like came out with like the 10 most effective strategies. She scientifically studied it. It's all sort of numerically sound. But the organizing models that were built off of that were predicated at a time in the 1980s and the early 1990s when it was like the boss, it's the boss's law. They get to do that. The politicians don't care. The Democrats don't care. The public doesn't care. And so a lot of it is about like organizing in secret. And a lot of it, like a lot of unions are making choices or have been making choices of like, we're not going to file that ULP because we're going to lose it, or it's not, we don't have the finances to fund that ULP. And like, if the Democrats go through a scorched earth campaign to pass the PRO Act, either through reconciliation or by ending the filibuster, and I do think that's a an actual possibility. If they do that, I don't think that enough Democratic decision makers, I don't think that enough reporters, although we've had, we've had like a real organizing boom in print media, which is very helpful, because when you've gone through an organizing campaign, then you know how difficult it is.
Right.
But I think in general, there aren't enough people who will tell the story of the workers that are going to try to organize in the wake of the PRO Act, who understand just how still, how tilted in favor of the bosses it is. And so I do think that union organizing strategists and workers and organizing committees, rank and file organizing committees, really need to grapple with, maybe we need to organize in public a lot more. Maybe we do need to file a ton of ULPs. Maybe we, yeah, I mean, when the National Labor Relations Act was not the first labor law that of the New Deal. The first one was the Blue Eagle, the National Industrial Recovery Act, which had a simple sentence that said, the federal government is going to guarantee workers' right to organize. And bosses were still, they were putting, guards out with machine guns and gunning down strikers. But you had enough, you had senators, who were calling for hearings and were taking testimony and were revealing how like that law wasn't enough, that like it really is bad. They will murder workers who try to form a union, and that's why we need better protections. And that's how we got unfair labor practices and the National Labor Relations Act.
Right.
And so we're back to the future, where that needs to be a part of the equation here. Like, let's organize, let's take some risks that workers are willing to take, and let's call attention to when the bosses do incredibly outrageous things, like Amazon is doing probably right now, right this minute. They're probably forcing a bunch of workers into a captive audience meeting.
No, absolutely. But my argument has always been that you need community organizing. You need the community behind it, and understanding that unions are a good thing. Workers with bargaining rights get higher wages. It's better for the community. You go back to some of the organizing that happened, in the 30s and 40s, and I, immediately I'm thinking of the Autolite strike and Toledo, where
Sure.
the community was 100% behind it, and helped fundraise and feed the workers so that they could be out long enough to actually win something. And though most of the people were never going to be union members, I think you have to be able to take it to that level of organizing, and that level of messaging. And I, again, my fear is, like you've pointed out, we're just not ready for that.
Yeah, no, I mean that's what I call organizing in public. I'll tell the story. So I used to run the American Federation of Teachers Charter School Organizing Division, and I was very much in this mindset of like organize in secret and surprise the boss with a 95% petition, march on the principal's office, demand union recognition, but keep it inside the four walls of the school building.
Right.
And the first charter school that we went for collective bargaining in New Orleans, where, after Katrina, they fired all the teachers, everything went charter. The first school that we organized was actually like, one of the most prominent, potentially the highest performing high school in the state. Mayors went there, governors went there, senators went there. The congressman for New Orleans was on the school board. We had a really good organizing committee. We had that 90% support. They marched on the principal and they demanded recognition. And the school board was like, well, let's have a hearing. You know, let's have a meeting and we can hear from our community, our parents, whatever. And like all of the media in New Orleans showed up for it. Like, and it terrified me to have an organizing meeting live blogged on the Times Picayune. And Wade Rathke from Acorn was there because he's an alum. It was an insane experience. But it was live blogged and the teachers were a solid organizing committee and they were solid in their messaging. And, you know, the school board's like, wait, we don't understand. Why did this happen? And the teachers just one by one in their testimony in this auditorium of 1,000 people were like, this is why. And also just like, how did you not know? Why are you surprised by this? And again, live blogged. Yeah, so the entire city watched it. And as terrifying as it was in the moment, it was like incredibly empowering, not just for the teachers at Benjamin Franklin High School, but for the thousands of other teachers in the city of New Orleans who were watching that live blog. And that's what Autolite was on a certain extent, right? Like the people that were supporting Autolite weren't just supporting the workers at Autolite getting a union. They were like, you get a union, I get a union, we raise the wages for everybody. And but like unions have not organized like that for a really long time.
And that's where we've got to change our mindset.
Terrifying.
And that's where we've got to change the mindset of people in this country, especially like you'll talk about pensions. You know, you don't have one, I don't have one, you shouldn't have one. This changes that mindset. I want what you've got. How do I get it?
So I can get it.
Exactly. So the last question real quick is, you know, do you see the Biden being up to that challenge?
I see encouraging signs. I mean, I'm frustrated by how much we're reading tea leaves. There's a very good story in the New York Times today, more around sort of the student debt issue, but like very much, you know, Biden's people, like, you know, unlike Obama's people, sort of like, yeah, go make that noise. Go embarrass us. Go, you know, make us do it.
Absolutely. Something good. Again, we're pushing. I hope you'll come back and share some more thoughts as this continues, as we get to see what the tea leaves are. But Sean, I appreciate the time, man. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
Good stuff, our good friend Sean. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this.